Ross Bowman Podcast.
You better listen.
Welcome back to the Ross Bowlin Podcast, presented by Bowlin Media. I am your host, Ross Bowlin, and today I will be joined in studio by special guest Will DeFreeze. Will is one of the founders of Washed Media, one of the hosts of the Circling Back Podcast, one of the hosts of the Retail Therapy Podcast, the creator of Sunday Scaries, which is the brand responsible for all the Slam's laptop shut till Monday memes you see, among other things. Father of two, Deadhead, former co-worker of mine, and all around one of the most talented content creators in the game, so we will have a lot to talk about. But first, a quick reminder of some of the things we have going on here at Bowlin Media. If you're an F1 fan, Jared Borislow, otherwise known as J-Bone, is still giving you the best F1 coverage on the whole of the internet with his show Formula Bone, which you can watch on youtube.com/@formulabone or listen to on podcast platforms. Follow at Formula Bone on all the social mediums as well. If you're watching Shogun or plan on watching House of the Dragon Season 2, the companion podcast for you is called Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, hosted by yours truly and Barrett Dudley. Oysters, Clams, and Cockles is available on YouTube and all the major podcast platforms as well. And for all the miserable Houston sports fans out there who can't wait till football season, I host a show called Banging the Can that's on YouTube and podcast platforms, so check that out. I deeply appreciate y'all supporting Bowlin Media. We are a small operation with 4 full-time employees, myself included, and we only survive thanks to the support of our listeners and followers and fans. So stick with us and tell your people about us. Support independent media, folks. All right, enough announcements. Let's bring in Mr. Will DeFreeze. What's up, brother?
First of all,
have you seen people doing "What's up, brother?" with one finger?
No.
Okay. Over the last 2 weeks, I've seen an Astros player do it when he hit a double, got to second base, put his finger up, and like mouthed "What's up, brother?" And then tons of social media posts, and this is below you and I's age group.
Okay.
It's from a Twitch streamer named Sketch.
Okay.
And he's just this kid who now has like millions of followers, but for whatever reason, his one of his bits is that he does like "What's up, brother?" and like puts up a finger. And all of these professional athletes have grabbed onto it. And it's just one of those inexplicable internet things, which is relevant to our conversation today, that has taken off with like no real reason behind it.
The youngs in my life, not meaning my in-laws, but the people that I know that I regularly talk to who are in their 20s are familiar with Sketch and do Sketch bits, and I'm like, I don't know what you guys are doing.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Even me, like I jumped on the Twitch train big time in 2020 when I literally had nothing else to do, and I was like, fuck it, I'll stream. I like video games. But even for me, like the Twitch like content world,
it's a different breed.
It's outside of our realm.
People that can sit there and watch a streamer for like 3 hours. Like, I respect that. I respect that you can do that. If you're entertained, by all means, do it.
Yeah.
I can't make it through like a 40-minute television show at this point without like taking a catnap. And so it's like, I just don't have it in me to go that far.
But even regarding that, it's like, it doesn't make sense because the generation below us is the one that has like a 30-second attention span. Mm-hmm. Like, they're the Zoomers are like TikTok for our generation is a stretch for most people.
Yeah.
But then they can sit there and watch somebody play a video game for like an hour and a half, and I just can't wrap my head around
it. Yeah, I mean, I could watch the Mighty Ducks series like straight through and not flinch. So like I will never say that like I'm a better generation because of like social media. Like I think especially like you and I, because I think we're a similar age. You and I definitely grew up. Like, I mean, aren't we like the
aren't
same?
Are we the exact same age?
Yeah, we're the exact same age, right? So you and I literally grew up like born, like no internet, no nothing. And yeah. we got to see like the forefront of everything at the right time of our lives where we knew how to handle it.
Well, sort of.
Kind of. Well, kids, like,
we did okay though. We did okay.
Kids these days, I don't have any hard evidence out there. I can maybe source some articles, but apparently like the younger generation's having trouble with viruses because they don't know how to suss out like weird files or sketchy
God,
things.
Okay.
But we had Napster, we had Kazaa, we had all those music downloading services. Like we had sketchy stuff in our lives online the entire time.
Yeah, yeah, from the get-go.
From the get-go. And so like we can say like, oh, this attachment looks weird. I'm not going to click this. Like whatever. These younger kids have always had something on a silver platter served to them. And so apparently they're downloading viruses at like a clip that we've only seen from like our parents' generation.
Well, that makes sense because for the younger generation that grew up on Apple, like that was the big selling point with Apple. If you remember, like when we were little, it was like you got like a gateway computer or like a fucking Dell, mm-hmm. right? And you really had to worry about the virus thing. And there was like, what was it, McAfee antivirus? We all had like all these antivirus programs, mm-hmm. which when we were downloading things on, you know, Napster or LimeWire or one of the other ones, it was constantly like going off, like stop doing what you're doing. But those kids all grew up on Apple, and then the gaming PC thing exploded.
Well, think
and all
about
these kids got PCs where there isn't that level of virus protection like there is with an Apple.
But think about all the kids that are growing up now that have grown up with Spotify. I go back on my Spotify and I see when I first started making playlists and I'm like, oh my God, I've been on here for so long.
Yeah, yeah.
That like an 18-year-old now who didn't have music taste when Spotify came out has probably never known anything but Spotify. So they don't have to even look at files.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see how that would become a problem eventually. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for taking the time for being here today. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm having an existential crisis right now just from thinking about this kind of stuff. But
yeah, that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Big same. Mm-hmm. It's like every week a new version of it hits. I saw a tweet from one of our former coworkers, Rob Fox, earlier today. He, one of his kids, I think his oldest, discovered the concept of death. Mm-hmm. By accident.
Okay.
And he had to lie to him and tell him that, like, oh, no, that was just a TV show. We'll all live forever. Mm-hmm. And my five-year-old stepdaughter has had a couple of different brushes with it. Like, she had a pet pass away. And, like, one of her, you know, her grandpa on my wife's side is passed. And so she knows dying is a thing. Mm-hmm. And she'll, like, bring it up on occasion. And, you know, I do my thing parenting-wise. I'm fine with it. But then when I leave the parenting situation, I have an existential crisis because like, I have to approach the concept of death. And, mm-hmm. and that's something about parenting I didn't see coming.
Yeah. Yeah. Parenting definitely inserted a piece of my life that I did not have before, that I was thankful I didn't have before. And that was just mortality. Like, it wasn't something I thought of. It wasn't something I was too concerned with. And like the second I had a kid, it was just like, oh, not only am I going to die, but like my parents are going to die. Everyone I know is going to die. My kids are going to die.
Yeah,
at some
dude.
Point. Like I brought something in the world that's going to die eventually. That's kind of sad to think about.
It's like the heaviest part of it, I think. Yeah. It really fucking is. And I was so much better at everything when I didn't give a shit if I was going to live or die.
See, I think I've done a good job. I think I've done an okay job maybe of figuring out ways to not worry about it as much. But that's also been like something I've had to actively work on. Like I've had to look at my therapist through the screen and tell her, like, hey, I'm thinking about mortality for the first time, and that's like that's a dark place to come from, in an otherwise like she's probably used to my sessions being like, oh, I'm anxious.
Yeah,
I'm online a lot.
Yeah,
like oh, I need to get my screen time done. And then I come to her one day after having a kid, and I'm like, hey. We're all dying.
Now it's time. Mm-hmm. Now it's time to talk about death. Well, yeah. I'm not doing well with it. I'm glad you are.
I'm doing better than I think I should be.
Also, just the concept of therapy through the screen, which I do as well. I picked it up in the pandemic, mm-hmm. and then I was like, I'm never going back to this.
I was like, this
never
is
going
nice.
Back to your office. I'm sorry.
This is great.
This is the way I do it now. Mm-hmm. Sometimes in this very chair, 5 minutes after finishing recording a show, I got to tell you is not great in terms of like the mental shift from entertainment to like,
you have to turn off. You're like, hold on. I'm not clipping this.
No,
after.
She'll have to tell me. She's like, you're still doing the show. And I'm like, oh my God. this is why I pay you though. Thank God for you. Or I'd be totally lost. But yeah, doing therapy through a screen sometimes feels like wrong. Like, it's just part of the problem.
It took me a very short period of time to get over it.
I got over it, too.
If I can talk to my parents through a screen and get fulfillment out of that, yeah. I can talk to someone else about stuff through a screen.
It's 100% effective. I'm not saying it's not effective. I'm just saying, like, fundamentally...
Going from no screen to screen for me was a jump because I was like, wait, I'm paying the same amount, not seeing him in person. And I'm like, hold on, actually, this is kind of great.
It is great.
I'm not getting in my car. I'm not going into some building where I have to be extremely quiet because people are hashing out their traumas in other rooms.
There's weird sound machines around the office to drown out the conversations.
The first time I ever went, I knocked on the wrong door and I was like, I might have just ruined someone's life.
Oh,
like,
I would have just walked out.
They could have been in a moment and then I like knocked on the door like some idiot and then they just were like...
They were about to have a breakthrough?
Yeah.
You went to the... we started on the heaviest possible note. Let's switch gears. You went to the Masters this year.
I did go to the Masters this year.
With your mom, right?
With my mom. And two cousins.
Was this your first time?
First time ever.
I couldn't remember if you'd been before just because you're like you're like the pillar of whiteness and this is such a white activity.
I've always wanted to go to the Masters. Like from the second I saw Tiger Woods win the Masters for the first time, like I watched it with my mom. My mom taught me how to play golf. She took me out all the time.
No shit.
We always knew we wanted to go to the Masters together. And then my cousin ended up winning tickets through the lottery and she was nice enough to extend me an invite. And I was like, let's go. Let's do this.
People actually win that thing?
I couldn't believe
it
myself.
That's a real thing that happens?
She said that she saw the email come through, and it said, like, she saw the subject line about, like, her entry, and then, like, the first thing just said, congratulations, you've been selected, ... And she was like, this has to be a joke.
It's like getting a Willy Wonka golden ticket.
I know.
I would have thought it was a phishing scam and deleted the email.
I know. I actually have to go into my, like, even though I've marked it as not spam a million times, I have to go in and look every year because it just goes straight there. And I'm, like, deathly afraid that one year I'm going to go in on, like, I'm going to search Masters on Masters, like, the first day, like, Thursday, and just see that I actually got selected that year and just be so pissed.
So you got to go because your cousin won the fucking...
Lottery
that no one wins. That's awesome.
Big time.
And y'all were up there on Monday?
We just did Tuesday. We got in Monday night, went to a nice dinner at Texas Roadhouse, and then moseyed back on to the hotel, and just did all day Tuesday.
What'd you think of Augusta?
Great. Like,
was it what you expected, though, in terms of the town?
Yeah. Based on what everyone had told me,
you've heard a lot, I guess.
Yeah, like, don't expect, like, some... bougie town. Like, it's Augusta, Georgia.
Yeah.
It's very simple. It's very straightforward. You're not going to have a big nightlife there. Like, just enjoy it.
I was not prepared for that part of it when I got to go in 2017, famously, which is now 7 years ago.
You got to re-up.
Yeah, when we went, I was, like, kind of blown away by how low-key Augusta is. That's how I'll put it nicely.
Yeah.
Because I was, oh, shit, there's nothing here.
Yeah.
Like, this whole town...
That's when I saw the Texas Roadhouse next to our hotel, I was like, we should just go here. Like, this is about as good as it's going to get.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's right here.
Yeah.
So
I went to the Hooters.
Yeah.
And, like, frankly, it was...
I drove by it twice.
Probably, and I realized that they like, fly in Hooters girls from around the nation for that week.
Makes sense.
But it was the coolest Hooters experience I had ever had by far.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it's probably the best one to be in during that time of year.
Yeah, I mean, John Daly's in an RV in the parking lot or whatever, so it's kind of hard to beat. But you said, okay, overall, what was that experience like, though, being out there?
It was awesome. I mean, I was very happy. I was actually very happy it was a non-tournament day and I got to go on a practice day because I was really looking forward to taking photos. Like, I don't know why.
Dude, you crushed the
photos.
I
just wanted to take photos. Like, it's just... Like, I'm not saying I didn't want to do it just for, like, social purposes. I just thought it would be so cool to have my own photos of such a bucket list place. And the fact that it was a practice round and not an actual tournament day, obviously I would like to go to a tournament day at some point. But, you know, if I can only go once and I can have photographic evidence of my mom and I on the course together, like, that's about as happy as I can be.
Yeah,
we're always going to have that relic together.
You're not talking about iPhone photos.
No.
So you got a camera for this.
Yeah, I had already been doing a lot of film photography leading up to, like, now. A listener actually reached out to me when I mentioned wanting to do it a few years ago, and he sent me a camera. I started using that camera a lot. The camera itself wasn't that nice, and so I got really nervous before going to the Masters that it just wouldn't work out. Like, the pictures might be off-center, something like that. And so I ended up going and buying a nicer film camera that almost looks like a digital camera, and did, like, a full test reel before just to make sure that, like, I had no questions. these photos would turn out.
You were prepared.
I was prepared. I burned an entire roll the day before I left and went and got it developed immediately just so I could like make sure that everything was fine. Because I didn't want to mess around with it. I had one roll mess up and one roll went perfectly. And so like I immediately took a full roll of photos the second I got out there so that I could at least like have that done and move on to the second one so that if one didn't work out, I'd at least have something else to move on to. When they all came back and I saw like the first couple, I was just like, thank God. Like not only do I have enough now to like, you know, get one framed for my mom and I, but now I have enough to like create a full photo book for my mom and I and my cousins. Like it's just it was a cool experience.
The ones you've put up that I've seen, I was like, Jesus Christ, he really did it.
Augusta makes it easy. Augusta makes it easy. Like it was such an easy place to photograph and like everything's cool.
Yeah, but you also have an eye for this. This is one of the things that makes you good at what you do.
I like photography and graphic design a lot.
Well, not even just photography. I mean like aesthetics.
Yeah. I like that kind of stuff anyway. And so like I almost feel like I've been doing graphic design for so long that like that's all in your control.
Right.
Like you can design anything you want really. With AI, you can really design anything you want
these
days.
Yeah, it's getting out of control, yeah.
And so, like, I almost feel like there's a part of me that likes the film part of it because it's out of your control a little bit, and you can't really do much with it.
What, in terms of the elements and, like...
Just, like, I can't, like, I don't know. I can't take a million iPhone photos and know they came out. Like, I have to really try to, like, look through the viewfinder, look at something, find something, take a photo, hope it turns out.
Different game than the iPhone game.
It's a little dicier, but it's I really enjoy doing it. And Barrett and I have talked about it on Retail Therapy before, like whether it's vinyl or like film photography. There's just something, and I'm sure like you feel it, like we're just so online these days that it feels really nice to it's almost just enough to have a hobby that's offline, just to pat myself on the back and be like, see, you're not online.
Oh no, it's huge.
Yeah.
I think it's huge. It's one of the it's weird because like for you and I over the last, at least for the combination of us, several years. When did you start the content game? When did you get into this?
I first started Sunday Scaries 11 years ago.
11 years.
And then I started working at Grand X almost 9 years ago, like to the day.
Okay, so you'd already been doing Sunday Scaries for a couple of years.
I did it, yeah, like part-time. Like
right.
I was writing...
It was a hobby.
I was writing a blog post 3 or 4 times a week, depending on my life.
And when you've been online as much as we have...
Yeah.
I think when you pass the decade mark,
yeah,
you start to be like, this is bad.
It was like chronically, it was like we were so online at Grand X too that like we almost just trained ourselves to be just extremely online.
Oh
like
yeah,
it's
no.
Hard to not be at this point.
The carryover from Grand X to now, there are habits I'm still trying to break.
Yeah.
Because it was so bad. There were so many brands.
It was fun.
It was. I'm not saying, it's just like the habits I developed as a creator at 26 no longer work for my life at 36.
There was just such a tangible benefit of being chronically online at Grand X that you were an idiot not to be at that point.
Yeah.
Because if you were first to something, then it could change the entire trajectory of the week for the entire side of the media company.
Right.
Like we could suddenly have a traffic week for the books and like, oh, this is great.
And which doesn't really apply to our shit now.
No,
though.
It's not as like, it's not as jumpy. And so like it created this like mindset of like always looking for news stories, always on Twitter, always whatever. And while I don't feel like I'm doing that now, sometimes I'm just like mindlessly scrolling. I'm like, well, you're not even looking.
Like, what am I even doing?
You're just bored.
Yeah.
And it's fine. Like, I don't know. I've worked on getting my screen time down in the past and I've gotten it down before, but it always just goes back up. I ask other people their screen times all the time, which I don't think is like necessarily the most like nice question. But like whenever I hear some answers, I'm like, okay, I'm in good shape.
Oh, dude,
I could be worse.
I'm not gonna ask you because I genuinely don't want to know.
Because mine's not bad.
Your answer will make me feel bad.
But if you combined my desktop with my iPad, with my phone, like that's a different story.
Okay.
But I think it's a different story for everybody because all the people on their work laptops, whether you're working or not, like you're still sitting there.
Yeah, but there's a difference.
Yeah, there's a difference.
The phone is like the number one problem.
Yeah.
Like, because now you're putting it in terms, like when you combine, like if you combine the TV, like you might as well just shoot me.
Yeah.
I'm just a person who stares at screens all day. But
Wally.
But dude, it's funny you say like you've gotten it down before because so have I. There was a point in like 2022 where I really worked at it and I got my screen time down to like what I saw as a much more reasonable figure. It was like six, 7 hours. which is not good.
No, it's not, Ross.
And then it's gone back up since then, I'll say that. But there was about a month ago, I had a glitch on my phone of some kind where it was saying at the end of the week, you had 22 minutes of screen time last week, and it wasn't true.
Yeah.
It still made me feel better.
I know. I saw you tweet that, and I was like, oh, I don't have this glitch anymore, but I had it for like a month straight. And
best.
It was like, you had 15 minutes last week. And I was like, well, not knowing is great.
Now, the other thing I tell myself to make me feel better is like, so when I work out, I'm using an app. So that's an hour of screen time, doing air quotes here, that's not really screen time technically. Just the phone is on, but I'm not over there like on it.
You know what messes it up? And I know you don't drive a ton. But like,
no,
if you connect your phone, at least in my old car, if you connected your phone to CarPlay,
that counted too.
It counted it the entire time that you were plugged in as screen time. And I was like, what am I doing wrong? Like, I'm actively trying to get my screen time down, but I have like an hour every single day. And then I realized like, oh, it's because I'm driving around all the time. And I was like, okay, whatever. We probably shouldn't be quantifying our lives with those numbers anyway, but it's hard not to.
I just know that more is bad. And that I have too much, and that it's been too much for too many years, and that it definitely affects my mental health, but also my career depends on me being a phone addict, so it's tough to anyway. Back to the analog experience you had at the Masters. Mm-hmm. That's one of the beautiful things about Augusta, no cell phones.
Yeah. Going into it, I was excited just for that. What. What a great time.
Oh,
I don't,
so cool.
I don't get super bothered. The only time I get bothered by people being on their phones in public a lot is I just don't like being at a concert and not being able to see the performer because the people in front of me have their phones. Like, I don't care. If you're tall and I'm behind you, that's my problem. But if you have if you're my height and you have your phone up and I can't see, that's the only time I'm like, all right, get off your freaking phone. Like,
yeah, you might as well be wearing a foam cowboy hat.
Yeah.
You asshole.
But it was nice. Like, I mean, seeing everyone out there just like hanging out, looking around.
It's in the moment, man.
It's impossible not to be in a good mood out there because you never get to go out there. Everyone is checking an item off their bucket list. And if you're not checking the item off your bucket list, then you're clearly living a good enough life where you're happy all the time anyway. And like, it's just hard not to be in a good mood. All the workers are in a good mood because everyone they're dealing with is in the best mood of all time.
It's the week of the year that they're making the most money too. Yeah,
like they're all hitting overtime on Tuesday and just making a boatload of cash the rest of the week.
No, you're right. Vibes are at an all time high out there because it's everyone for the most part. I mean, it's probably the percentage of people you're describing that it's not a bucket list item for them because they get to go so often. It's like, well, who fucking cares what those people think anyway? But for most, the strong majority of the people out there, they're having the time of their lives.
Yeah.
So like the vibes and the energy when you walk through those gates. It's kind of like unlike anything else you could possibly. I would compare it to like when you're a child and you go to like Chuck E. Cheese and you go in and just everyone is vibing.
Vibes off the charts. Yeah. Like there's nothing better.
There's just not that many places where as an adult you feel that.
No. And there's nothing like there's really not like nothing like that.
Because people would be like, oh, well, what about like your favorite bar? It's like it's not the same. It's not the same.
It's just cool. Like it's just and seeing it on TV for so many years. It just makes it so much cooler to see it in person.
It's surreal, seeing it
in person, then in return, makes it cooler seeing it on TV again.
Yes.
Like it just the relationship changes itself and it builds. And like now, just having the memories of doing it like with my family members, it's just an awesome experience. I'm a Masters addict now.
It's truly magical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, and that's the problem is once you've been out there, you're like, how can I make this happen again?
I know.
And
I didn't think
hard.
I was gonna care. I was leaving town the same weekend after we went. On a trip that I had planned before the Masters, and someone was like, are you going to care that you can't watch the Masters that you're like literally going to? And at the time I was like, nah, it'll be fine. Like I'll be fine. And then I got out of town. It was like an addict. I was like, I'm just watching on my phone sitting at the bar. Like I just couldn't help but watch. And so I don't know. I'm just wearing Masters swag around my crib all the time. I'm not shameless enough to just wear it in public constantly right now. So I'm just like at the crib, just like putting on something new every night, enjoying myself.
I still do it every year during the tournament. I wear the stuff that I bought from the pro shop when I was there. And like I'll be dropping my kids off and at school and some dad will be like, oh, hey, ready for the Masters? And I'm like, yeah, dude, that's why I'm wearing the shit.
Yeah.
That's why I'm wearing the shit because I'm very fucking ready. And I need people to know I was there at one point many, many years ago.
It's Diamond Rock Hard Boner Season. Listen up, because this episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Fellow aging men waving bye-bye to your prime. Remember the days when you were always ready to go and could serve solid dong on demand? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence when it's bang bang skeet skeet time. Listen up, BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's all done online. So no weird visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. BlueChew's tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped direct to your door. And in discreet packaging, I might add. I've used Blue Chew's tablets several times, and Diamond Hard Boner are the three words I would use to describe the results. Not rock hard. This is another level. Diamond status. If you're looking for more confidence, if you're looking to make a lasting impression, if you're in the market for the best sex of your life, Blue Chew could be the answer for you, too. Blue Chew wants to help you have better sex. Discover your options at BlueChew.com. Chew it and do it. We've got a special deal for the RBP gang. Try Blue Chew free. When you use promo code RBP at checkout, just pay $5 in shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code RBP to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information, and we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast. All right, let's shift gears again. Sunday Scaries now boasts over 725,000 followers on Instagram at Sunday.Scaries. And your patented slams laptop shut till Monday meme broke through to the mainstream at what I would define as like the highest possible level over the course of 2023. What has that been like?
I don't know. Like, it's just been like when the account first started growing, like
taking off.
Yeah. Like, it was kind of like, oh shit. It was also at a weird time. It was at a time when COVID had just started. The account had like 20,000 followers or something for a long time, somewhere in that number.
When COVID had started, it was still at the 20,000 range?
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy shit.
It might have been a little higher up. It might have been like 40,000 or something. I don't remember at that time.
Sub 100,000.
But like, a lot of those followers were due to Grand X and just people following because they knew of Grand X. And I think they probably thought that it was like maybe a Grand X property at one point or whatever. Like, and so people were just kind of following it. And I was just treating it like kind of a nothing thing. Like, oh, I'll just post like random mood board photos. And then during COVID, I was bored and I was like, well, I'm going to start, like, I guess I can take this online. I've never really seen anyone like make memes out of like good looking photos.
Well, and it's Grand, X, like, Grand X was gone.
Yeah.
So you had like more motivation to build your own thing.
Yeah. I hadn't really figured out an identity for the account at that point. And I truly didn't even think, I didn't even want the identity to be like a meme page. And I still don't really want it to be like that, even though that's what it is, because that's what people like the most. And so it's like, it's just this like annoying little process. But so when I first started doing it, like, I started trying to, the way that I marketed the Sunday Scaries podcast, which I started while we were at Grand X, was by doing memes with like random TV shows that I thought were like similar. And those always did well. So then I remember one day just being like, oh, those did pretty well. Maybe I'll just try something new. And I did, and it started working, and it started like getting followers like crazy. And I was like, oh, well, I got to keep doing this. And so I started doing it. Like, I just told myself one a day, every day. And I just did one a day every single day for probably like almost a year.
And that consistency is very important. Yeah.
And so I had a roommate who explained to me at a very early time at Grand X, like, how important consistency was when it came to content creation. He was like, well, this is what a weekly show does exponentially. This is what a daily show does. This is what whatever. And so then I started realizing, like, okay, like, even if it's just one simple graphic, just one thing, it still is something that is going to like remind people that the brand exists, that the whatever. And so I
and
just
allow them to connect with it.
Yeah. And so I really took what he said as like truth and started trying to be much more regular with it. And then like that was already doing well enough and I was having fun with that. And it was a really good way to promote the Sunday Scaries podcast at the time. And while the numbers weren't like the growth wasn't the same, I still saw some growth out of it. And so I was encouraged by it. But then like I started doing Slam's laptop and it just got crazy. Like, I think I started doing that in probably 2022 or something, maybe 2021. And I would just do like one a week. And then I started doing an album because people started complaining, which they're still doing.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
And it got like crazy. And I was like, okay, like now it's actually nuts. Like now I'm like, I could guarantee that if I put up a Slam's laptop at one point that like I could get 5,000 followers from it. And right. So it's just like the eating was good. And that's like leveled off now. I always know it's going to do fine. And I don't really think about it. Like I try not to overthink it because it is what it is. Like,
well, now you're at the point where you have that luxury. You don't have to overthink it.
Yeah. Like all I try to do is just find something that like represents the feeling of the people that are following the account. And usually that's a celebrity like drinking or something. And right. So like, I just try to find if some celebrity that I think is entertaining posts an entertaining photo from themselves, then it's like, cool, like whatever. And sometimes they repost, sometimes they don't. Sometimes it doesn't, like, I don't really care if they repost or not. That doesn't help. It doesn't help them at all to like repost it. It just kind of helps me. So why would they do that?
But this also gets back to the aesthetic thing, because there's a certain aesthetic that you have to capture with every single one of those that I think is very unique to you. And the kind of stuff that you make.
Like, I've always wanted, I don't know. Sunday Scaries has always been, like, my creative outlet that I have never really had, like, some target. Like, it might feel like I have a targeted, like, long-term idea for it. Like, I don't. Like, it's mostly just a creative outlet that I like messing around with and, like, promoting my personal work through. Like, I really do enjoy making the graphics. I really enjoy having a huge audience. The most, like, the things that I like the most are like interacting with the audience. So like if I do Rough Mondays where people submit those kind of things, I like people identifying with each other's shitty lives. Like,
yeah, it's like a full-blown community
now. It's great. Yeah, it's great. And like I like knowing that the community is like cool. Like, I mean, a lot of times I can ask the community for recommendations and I can trust all the recommendations because I trust these cool people that interact with the account. Like the target audience has been reached and I think it's a pretty cool audience overall. Like, sure, there's probably some terrible recommendations in there and some bad eggs, but like I truly feel like a lot of the audience thinks about things in the same way or has similar tastes and things like that. And while I don't necessarily want like an echo chamber, it is nice to have a community that I can actually rely on and put stock in.
Yeah, that you can depend on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like,
especially going from Grand X where the community was supporting us at one point and also just messing with our lives at other points too. Like,
yeah. It was very toxic.
It was great to have a constant comment section, but also the comment section was so full of trolls who appreciated the work that we did, but they kind of made you feel like an idiot sometimes and you're like, what am I doing?
Oh, this is the worst written thing I've ever seen. Yeah. You should kill yourself and never write again. Like, yeah, no, it was hell in there.
I know they didn't mean it.
It's hard not to take the negativity personally, even exactly. When you know it's trolling. And I think us now at this point in our career would handle that a lot better than we did then, because it was like, it was hard not to be sensitive to it. And it was annoying, bro. That was the biggest part of it.
It was like I fucking worked a long time on this.
Yeah, now just fuck you, man. Yeah.
Like, you're honing in on one misspelled word and telling me I'm an idiot. And I just like wrote 2,000 words on a fictitious story about someone who doesn't it's just like, what are we doing?
But it is funny because it's like, so for Grand X, the whole reason that company was able to exist, I mean, literally, the entire foundation for the company was the concept of a one-line joke in the form of a total frat move, a TFM, right? And this thing that you've built with Sunday Scaries is the closest comparison from anyone that we know or are familiar with anyway, at least like personally, that I could say is very similar in that way.
Yeah.
Where it kind of puts you in a position where it's almost like, and this is one of the things I'm curious to know, you said you have no long-term plan with it, right? But you are aware that, like, you have to do something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or else it's like content malpractice.
Yeah, like, the way that I try to look at it now is that, like, Slam's laptop, that's not mine. That's the internet's now. Like, the internet owns
that. That's how it works,
like,
yeah.
Enjoy it. Like, because I used to get upset if somebody else put out one, and I was like, well, you need to, tag me. What the hell? And then now
I know I would watch you get pissed on Twitter, and it would make me, like, tickled.
What annoyed me, like, if some like small skincare company did it, it's like, whatever, like they're just grinding trying to sell some face cream or something. Yeah. When an NFL team does it, I'm like, at the time I was like, how lazy is your social team that you're just ripping from me? But what I didn't realize at that time was that, like, it was just a likable thing that people wanted to recreate with their own vibe to it. And now that I've realized that and come to terms with it, then I've just said it. Like, it's the internet's now. Like,
and
enjoy
now, now you're okay with it.
Yeah.
There was a point where every time I saw one, almost every time, I would like text you or in some way try to check in with you because I could tell you were taking it the wrong way.
Yeah.
And like, it's the, as you know, on the internet, like that's the ultimate form of flattery. Like if you've created something that breaks through to the level where like the San Diego Chargers social media manager has ripped off your meme and is using that to like promote something.
Yeah.
That's, you've won.
It's also
like the battle is over.
It's also dumb to like get upset over because like all I'm doing is like taking photos that celebrities post to themselves and putting it behind this thing and making a slideshow. Like it's not my content. So yeah, like but I don't really care that much.
But it's still in a way it's like your concept, right? So that's like I was watching you on Twitter like motherfuckers like you were you were getting after some people for this and I was dying laughing like Will, you're winning. Stop getting angry about this, bro.
But like, I don't know. I've gotten burned before on certain things that I won't get into.
Oh, 100% understand.
Like, it's like annoying. And then, but like now realizing that like, oh, that's fine. It doesn't really matter. Like it is what it is. And honestly, the audience is really good about tagging me in those things and not getting upset unless like I would get upset over it. And now like, I'm just like, if someone sends me one, I'm like, oh, cool.
Well, now it's like it's constant at this point. Like
and
it's completely,
no one really sends it like in a negative light anymore.
Yeah. Well, every time I saw one, I was happy for you and almost like proud of you in a way. And then I would see you get angry and I was like, oh my God.
It is like one of them. It's like, what? Yeah, it really did reach the mainstream in a way that I never really expected it to.
Oh my God. And in particular, last year, it really got crazy where it was like every week I would see like a major, major company or brand utilizing it in a way that was like, it was mind blowing. So like, I had questions. What name some of the biggest brands that have ripped off your patented Slam's laptop shut meme
it's
for us?
It's always the biggest ones are NFL teams, which doesn't make any sense to me because if there's any entity that should be keeping their laptops open through the weekend, it's an NFL team. Like you play on Sunday
when their whole shit takes place. Yeah,
there's like one time where some like I think like the Bengals won. I think like a Thursday night game and they posted a Slam's laptop and I was like, there you go. Like that actually does make sense. You won a Thursday night game, now you can take the weekend off.
But okay,
like,
good.
All the other people, I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Oscar Mayer Wieners did one recently. That was good.
Did you have a Starbucks one?
Mm.
Maybe not Starbucks.
They might have done it.
Paris Hilton. Do I remember Paris Hilton?
Yeah, Paris
using
Hilton
one?
Did one. Paris Hilton did one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like,
and then there's a lot of really shitty. I'll tell you what does bother me when I see imitations of it, like versions of it that aren't good.
What kills me is when they. If they try to get the font right and they don't get the font right,
oh, it's tough.
It kills me because that's like what I actually like the graphic design side of things so much that when I see if it's bad graphic design, that annoys me.
Yeah.
If they take their own font and do it, then I'm like, all right, I'm glad you at least like recognize that you can't recreate this font. I think there's like a way to do it on Instagram at this point where I've like you can use like a sticker or some shit.
Okay.
That's some Gen Z stuff that I don't really know how to do. Like it's really easy. It's really easy to recreate it if you know how to work like Photoshop text tools.
Yeah.
Like it's really simple.
So one of the other things I've noticed that seems to grind your gears on occasion is when people are all over your ass about the time you put up the Slam's laptop shut till Monday post. How are you dealing with that?
Here's the thing.
Aside from therapy.
It goes up at 11:40 every single, at 11:40 Central Time every single week.
Why? I don't
deviate because that's just when I started, like, I usually go for lunch around noon.
Okay.
So I used to spend my Friday morning making the slideshow, posting it, and then I'd go to lunch after doing it.
And you just 11:40, just an arbitrary time.
Yeah. And then I just started doing it then. It hits at 5 o'clock in the UK or around 5 o'clock in the UK, which was not intentional, but a lot of UK people are like, no, it's perfect. Like, keep it the way it is, please. But when people complain about it, I'm like, it's still there in 4 hours when you get off. Like, I'm doing it so that it's just there. Just enjoy it. Like, it'll still be there when you get off. You don't have to post it right now.
But people light you up, though.
Yeah, I know. But then on Fridays, like all the New Yorkers who complain about it, like they're all doing summer Fridays and stuff and leaving work on Friday early.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, like we don't get that down here. We should get it down here, but we don't.
Summer Friday?
They all take Friday off, dude. Or at least get half day.
Don't they also vacation like Europeans? Get like the summer off and shit?
Know. New York's a different beast.
Yeah.
They live differently than we do.
You make some fantastic merch now as well.
It's okay. I wish we could do more.
Well, it's great.
It's a pain point, though. I don't make enough. I want to make way more.
Yeah, it's time-consuming.
It's really time-consuming.
You got boxers I saw most recently.
Yeah, those are nice.
Those are cool.
I wear them almost every night these days. merch is one of those things that, like, you like shopping. I know you like shopping.
I did once, yeah.
Yeah, like...
when I had money and time.
It's nice to buy something nice.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like, creating a nice product that you can sell to a bunch of people and, like, have minimal maintenance after, whether it's, like, returns, exchanges, stuff like that. Like, when you're a small operation, you don't want to deal with that on a grand level.
Right.
And so, like, it's always... that's, like, the biggest push and pull that I have with Sunday Scaries is I want to create like a million different products. The logistics of doing so, especially with like the schedule that we have for like recording and writing and stuff like that, it just makes it really difficult. And so like, I don't always put out the product that I want to at the time, but like, I always like to have something that's at least available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially now that you're a dad,
oh,
like
yeah.
The logistics of free time. I saw somebody recently, I can't remember who it was, and I want to say it was Bill Simmons, and I really hope it wasn't. No offense to the big Bill Simmons fans. I can't take that dude anymore. He said, your first kid is like blowing your ACL, and your second kid is like tearing your Achilles for a writer.
Okay. Yeah.
Like it just absolutely, because like writers, for those of you who don't dabble or full blown write, you need a big block of what most people would describe as free time.
Mm-hmm.
And you dedicate that to writing and deep thought and notes and ideas and outlining and writing. When you have kids, that doesn't exist anymore. It just kind of fucking disappears. It's like, it's one of the things that's really hard to adjust to with parenthood is you go from like, you know, you get out of college and you join the real world and you're like, oh fuck, I got all this stuff I got to do. This sucks. That is nothing compared to the jump from the real world with no kids to kids, because it just wrecks.
Do you have a time of day you like to write?
No, I don't. I mean,
did you have a time of day at Grand X? Like,
at night.
You like to do night?
Yeah, which fucking sucks, because now if I don't go to sleep at night, I'm dead the next day, and then I'm worthless.
Yeah.
So I can't do it at night anymore.
I'm actually, Bill Simmons, actually, speaking of him, he said something in a mailbag when he was working. It was just an ESPN mailbag before anything.
So this is a long time ago.
Long time ago. He said something in a mailbag about how he likes to write in the morning. And I started to think about that after I read that, because I was trying to start writing more. And after he like changed my mindset, and so I started writing only in the morning all the time. I would write after work and stuff, but I would usually try to spend my time after work on Sunday Scaries maintaining the website or making changes and stuff like that. Kind of like brainless work that didn't need to get done.
Right.
But I really liked writing in the morning. And so like working at Grand X was awesome, because I didn't have anything to do besides write and edit.
Get in, drink coffee, write.
I would just get in at 8 a.m. every day, pound 3 cups of coffee while writing or editing, but I would try to mostly write in the morning. And like, I miss it. Like I truly miss that. And I always thought like, oh, I could probably write at night when I have kids. But like, once they go down, you've been going all day. I don't want to sit down on a laptop and like do like the hardcore thinking work.
Well, my brain isn't capable of it anymore.
And I don't have time in the morning with like just the way my life is currently set up to do those like, you know, 3-hour chunks of writing that I really truly enjoy doing.
Yeah.
Like if Watch Media went away tomorrow, the first thing I would do is spend the next 2 months writing every single morning just to get like back into it.
Back into the flow of it.
And like see if I can do anything with that. Like just because that's something I don't do anymore. And I think it would be so fun to dive in and do that again instead of recording every morning, which I enjoy recording every morning. But it would be nice to just take every single morning and write and see like what I could do. Because it's just been a while since I've exercised that part of my brain.
Yeah, I tell myself that this period of time of my life when I have young kids and I don't get to write the way I want to, that it's somehow going to pay off, because all these ideas and shit are still in there. And then one day when I have time to sit down and write, they'll come out.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not, but it is what I tell myself.
I've been doing more, and the issue that I find is like I'm having trouble like just diversifying my vocabulary, which is not something I ever had trouble with before, but I'm like, wait, I used to have an arsenal of words for writing dialogue of like, oh, she replied. Oh, what? And like, suddenly I'm like, oh, that list got real short after not writing for the last few years. And so it's like, it's just a different beast.
Do you read?
No.
Okay. I just got back into like trying to read, because I noticed this exact same thing with me. Like, first of all, I feel like there's been a myriad of factors. Myriad's a good word. See, I still got that one.
Yep. Can be used a lot of different ways. You can put an A in front of it or not. It doesn't really matter.
In a myriad of ways. But I've gotten progressively dumber for sure over the past 4 years. I've felt myself becoming more and more stupid.
I don't feel more stupid. I just feel like I can't explain what I want to do as much. But
oh, I do.
But
I
you've
feel
also
more
been
stupid.
Writing. You've been writing. You haven't been writing as much as me, because even once I left Grand X, I was still doing the Sunday Scaries podcast, which was scripted.
Right.
I just wasn't writing columns. I was writing aggressive outlines that were essentially just columns reformatted a different way. And so, like, now since I've stopped doing that, I stopped doing that in September last year. Now I'm just not. I do like newsletter stuff,
you
but
do
it's
Substack.
But it's not like I'm not writing those 1,200 word columns that I used to write like every single day.
Yeah,
I mean, that's when I felt like I was firing. Like, I felt like my brain was actually like healthy and going, because I could do it just so easily.
No, I know what you mean, like, in terms of your vocabulary dropping off, because most of the writing I do, and this I don't consider it to be writing, is when I'm like, I have to watch Shogun and then write the outline for the podcast about Shogun. But it's mostly me transcribing. It's not really writing. Like, I'm taking notes about what I'm watching happen. So it doesn't, it's not like me sitting down, coming up with things out of my brain. You know what I mean? So it's just, it's been rough.
Yeah, it's a weird
and I'm trying
transition.
I'm trying to battle back, because I've described it as like it, a lot of people call it like dad brain. That's definitely part of it. But also, like, when I got off meds, I swear to God, I dropped like 40 IQ points. Like, it just destroyed my brain coming off antidepressants. And I'm still recovering from that. Anyway, enough about me. Let's talk about the algorithm.
Okay.
Remembering that this is a safe space and I won't clip this part of the conversation for social media.
Okay.
How frustrating is it when you see like one of your Slam's Laptop Shut Till Monday posts get like 40,000 likes, and then sponsored posts get absolutely pummeled by like algorithmic suppression?
It's just weird. Well, it's like Slam's Laptop is always going to do at least decent numbers until people don't care about it, or until like,
which at this point may never
it's
happen.
It's out of favor. Like, it does. Like, I don't. It's always going to do fine. And I know that if I do a meme dump with like random memes and stuff, like, I know those are going to do fine. But like, those are not really the most gratifying things to do. And so like, if I'm doing something, Slam's Laptop is a staple at this point.
Right.
If I stop doing all other meme stuff using photos from celebrities, like, whatever. If I stop doing that tomorrow, Slam's Laptop is probably still going to exist in some fashion. But like, when you take time to create something, whether it's a clip for a podcast that you want to do, that you would love to do well, so you can keep maintaining, you know, so you can keep harvesting an audience on this platform that should be serving you. Like, you'd love for those things to do better.
Yeah, you'd love that.
Like, sponsored stuff is kind of a weird thing, because I understand why it will ding you for not having good sponsored stuff, but at the same time, you are bringing people to their platform.
Yeah, but you make good sponsored stuff.
I do. It's okay. It's good. But, like, sometimes it's not...
not as engaging?
Sometimes it's not the algorithm. Sometimes it's the brand or the agency who stops you from doing things that would...
that would do better, yes.
Set it apart and do really well. And and that's frustrating in itself, but that is what it is. Like, they're paying you. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, the part of it that you just touched on that always bothers me is it's like you are there on the platform creating content so that the platform thrives in a way. Like, your stuff draws people in. That's what they're there to check on and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So you should be able to also put stuff that's not exact, not... just because it doesn't serve Meta's business practices,
but it's so annoying,
shouldn't punish you.
But like, it's just across everything. Like, I love doing the news. I love doing newsletter. I love Substack. I think it's a great platform, especially for people like us.
Who, oh, it's
like,
awesome.
Like, it's just really smart. It's really well done. But like, not being able to promote your Substack through Twitter because Elon has just suppressed everything because of his beef with Substack.
Yeah, personal vendetta.
Like, it's just annoying. It's like, well, I want the people that follow me to be able to read the stuff that I do or enjoy it. But like, I also know that if I tweet that out, one tweet will get 20,000 views on it, and a Substack link will get 1,000 views on it.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's what annoys me the most, is like, I just want to give people things for free, and like, it doesn't even serve you well there.
Yeah, it sucks, because I mean, and for younger people listening, they're probably like, what the hell are these two old kooks talking about? But like, 2014, I want to say, is when it was, when Facebook was like, oh, wait a minute, we're giving all these people all this traffic, we could charge them for this. And they shut off the fire hose, as we used to call it, and they were like, now give us money, we've shown you what we can do with our platform, what our platform can do for
and
you.
And then it worked.
it worked for them.
But like for a little bit, paying, if you could like boost a post on Facebook or something, sometimes it like would really shoot it into the algorithm, but it used to do that without having to pay $25.
Right. Right. Well, and now it's everybody's in the pay-to-play game, and it's just...
It's not $25 anymore. You'd have to spend thousands of dollars
to get
the same exposure.
And it's a clusterfuck. And it still feels like a crapshoot. So it's really... That's the thing about the shift over the past 10 years that's crushed my soul, is it used to be, if I follow you, I'm going to see your shit. Because I chose to follow you, that means I want to see your stuff.
Yeah.
And the platforms trusted me to pick the things I wanted to see, and then they would show me those things. Yeah. And then now... That's not how it works at all with the algorithms and with the pay to play.
When people say like, "Oh, set up notifications for me," I'm like, "That it's a lame thing to say to people."
Yeah.
But I also do set up notifications for my favorite outlets or people because I want to know when those things are released, and I don't think the algorithm's going to serve it to me.
Yeah.
Like
most people aren't going to do the notification thing, though.
I know most people won't, and like, for like, I'm trying to think of a good example of this. The best one I can think of is there's this guy who I think he lives in Nebraska. His name's Christopher Hazard. And he redoes old Grateful Dead concert footage. And he only tweets when he finishes a video and puts it on YouTube and does it. And so I missed all of his stuff for so long. And finally I was like, okay, like I don't want to miss this guy's stuff because it's cool. It's new. Like it's good work that he's doing. I want to be able to see this and like enjoy it. And so now he's one of the few people that I have set up, but it's because the algorithm just doesn't serve him well because he doesn't have that consistency we were talking about. Like he's not posting every day.
Fucking algorithms.
You should be rewarded if you're not posting every day. You should be rewarded with like the gift of like built up, you know, equity of not taking up people's brain space.
Of quality over quantity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We don't live in that world anymore, unfortunately.
The most frustrating times are when Instagram's taking the account away.
And oh, that's, yeah.
But like I've never gotten an actual answer as to why it's been taken away. And so it's like
he's talking about when Sunday Scaries has been without explanation and seemingly without any reason. Randomly, like, banned.
Yeah, it's happened, like...
From Instagram.
Three times now. The first two times were, like, borderline, like, identity crisis mode. But...
For you.
I also got, like, I actually did get some answers at one point, and none of them were bad answers. Like, I mean, they were annoying answers, but, like, one of the answers was, a developer said that because there's a period in the username, something happened with some code.
Oh, okay.
And it did so, and it like just messed up your account.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's really annoying, but like also it's nice to know that I'm not like in trouble. Like Instagram will tell you if you do something, you get in trouble.
Right.
Like I had like a copyright strike at one point because I used a photo that I shouldn't have used. It was like a copyrighted photo of a royal. And like the royals don't, especially the British paparazzi doesn't fuck around. And that's why I don't do that stuff anymore. Like right. I will only post a photo that a celebrity's posted to themselves. And that's really it. Like, I really don't like doing it otherwise.
This very podcast's Instagram has been suppressed into, what's it called? When you shadow banned into oblivion.
I got, so Scaries was shadow banned at one point, but then I think the same reason that they said was because there was a period in the username.
It's weird. The internet, shit like that can happen. Like, oysters, clams, and cockles because there's an, what's that called? An ampersand?
Yeah.
Whatever. The platforms absolutely despise that. Like on Spotify, it pops up sometimes as like a fucking upside down smiley face because it doesn't know. It's just so confused by that thing.
It's annoying that like those issues are things that like we face as people who don't really want to deal with any. Like, I think you and I deep down just enjoy creating stuff and like putting it out to the world.
Yeah, I hate dealing with this
and
shit.
Being at the whim of these companies is like the scariest thing that we have to deal with.
Oh, it's the absolute worst. I bitch about it on a weekly basis now because I can't, I'm like struggling to let go and just live.
Yeah.
Because
it's just
I'm
a
like,
weird thing.
At any given moment, I can get absolutely screwed from one direction or another, which is another thing I've respected about your grind with Sunday Scaries. You've kept it focused on one platform for the most part.
Yeah.
In terms of Instagram being the main stable of your content.
That's where the audience is. That's like what I think that our generation uses the most.
When it's less for you to worry about, just maybe that was accidental, but like it's also genius in the way that you don't have to fuck with like eight different places.
Twitter's just for like Twitter is for day ones. Like that's how, the way that the Twitter has always been is for people that are like just hardcore fans. And I don't even it might have felt political at the time, but like when Elon took over and the app was shitty, I was just like, I'm not even going to worry about tweeting for business purposes right now because brands are pulling out of business deals. I don't know what's going to go on with Twitter. And so I kind of just stopped tweeting from the Sunday Scaries account.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really get much out of it compared to the Instagram. And like Instagram's just where everybody was. And I think that even though like a lot of the users probably do use TikTok, it's still the kind of thing that like, I don't really use TikTok that often. I'm already doing a lot of content creation. I don't really feel like having that going on. And I wasn't producing, when TikTok was really taking off and people were getting followings like crazy, I wasn't producing that much video content at the time. Like,
right.
A lot of my expertise online has to do with writing and graphic design, which does not offer itself well to video stuff.
Right.
And so like doing video has been newer for me and an adjustment. Like just getting reels up is a struggle for me because I don't want to be like on camera all the time. I really have to like, I like posting like Zen clips of things,
right.
But like, it's just difficult to figure out just the whole game to play. Really. It's just kind of a game at some point. But like at the end of the day, when people have asked me like about building the following and stuff, the two things that I tell them are like, number one, consistency. And then number two, all I try to look at for validation when it comes to this stuff is shares.
Yeah.
As long as people are sharing it, it's going to be fine. Like if the algorithm still sucks, like as long as people are sharing it at a good rate, then that means that you have a happy audience and that they're doing well. And so it's like, okay.
Well, the algorithm heavily factors in how much something's being shared too.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. When you see something hit the Discover feed versus not, like the difference is wild.
Oh my God.
It's like, Scaries does pretty good numbers regardless. And so like something hitting the Discover feed, it doesn't do like that much better because I think the core audience is already getting pretty hit at that point.
Right.
When you see something actually go crazy though, it's like mind blowing how much it does. We have a clip from on Circling Back that's like about a golf scramble and like we're still getting tens of comments every day on it of people just talking about
it. Oh yeah, I saw that one pop the fuck off.
It's like, I'm like, how is this still going crazy? But that's just how it works. But I also, like, do you think those things drive a lot of value to the creator when it gets in the Discover feed?
No, not really.
It's kind of just feel good numbers for you.
Yeah, and that sucks.
Yeah.
It's part of the problem I have with the whole fucking system at this point is it's like, even if you can get one of these TikToks that goes viral and gets over 1 million views, and you in your mind, you're like, this should translate to growth for the show.
Though. It doesn't.
But it doesn't work that
it's
way.
It's the grind of it. Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, shit. Okay, well.
It's wild how much like, it doesn't really add to the.
Yeah. And you might get some followers out of it. But like for the most part, in terms of the business that we work in, you and I, it doesn't help that much, which is, it's annoying. It's annoying.
If you look at like the over 1 million people that liked the Circling Back clip of us talking about the scramble, like. That episode probably didn't perform. It probably performed worse than a lot of episodes. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, there's no way of correlating that. And
right.
So, like, that's where the grind and consistency comes in because you have to have a good product consistently in order to, like, maintain the audience, which you know as much as anybody. It's, like, it's tough
it's
to maintain an
hard.
Audience.
It's hard. Today's episode is also brought to you by Shopify. Chappelle and Neil, Key and Peele, Faye and Poehler, Setup and Punchline. So what about the perfect duo when it comes to growing your business? That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit 1 million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling merchandise for your podcast or handmade kaleidoscopes, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person so you can focus on successfully growing your business. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36%. Better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Selling merchandise for our podcast here at Bolin Media, big supplemental revenue source for us, allowing us to provide our biggest fans and supporters with shirts and hats and coffee mugs that they can wear and use in real life to show their support for our company and our shows. And Shopify can be the platform that enables you to connect with your supporters in the same way. I've used the platform extensively. Shopify is amazing. And Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is the global force behind all Birds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/RBP, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/RBP now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/RBP. And again, that is all lowercase. All right. Well, I don't have that much more time with you, so I'm going to get through a few more questions.
That's okay.
As someone that doesn't drink and literally never gets to slam his laptop shut until Monday, I have to ask, have you ever considered making a meme that I can identify with and share?
I just don't know what it would be.
Bro, you can, I cannot tell you how many times I see people that are my, like friends of mine, like not even friends of yours, like just people that are, know me and don't know you, and I'll see their Instagram story and it'll have the Slam's laptop shut till Monday in it, and I'm like, God damn it, I want to be part of this, but I don't identify with that part of it because I haven't gotten to slam my laptop shut till Monday since like 2017. So
Ross, I have created a brand that is based around this day Sunday, which means that like on Sunday I have to work. Like I can't not work on Sunday. It's so dumb.
That's the downside.
And that's why on Mondays, like usually we're recording on a Monday right now. Like,
which I almost never do anymore. Thanks for making me do this.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. I don't do much on Monday afternoons. Yeah. Like I am at the office. I try not to schedule any meetings. I try not to schedule any recordings, which I don't have to worry about because the Too Much Dip Boys are doing their thing. But like it actually allows me to kind of not just do nothing, but like maybe work on something lightly that I've been thinking about, whatever. But like every Sunday, I have to wake up and open my laptop. It's not a fun thing, but it's also the bed that I've made for myself.
Dude, I give you a lot of props, though, because, I mean, we started the show talking about consistency, and if nothing else, you are one of the most consistent content creators in the game, because I still feel shame every week when I open my email and the Sunday Scary Substack newsletter is in there, and I'm like, I don't understand how this fucker doing this.
I feel shame when I don't do it. Like, it's just for me. Like, it's not for other people. Like, yeah. It's for me. I feel ashamed if I don't do it.
Right.
Like, I have to do it for myself.
See, I don't have that anymore. Like, I started a Substack probably, I don't know, either a month before my son was born or right after. Because I was like, I can't take it anymore. I need an outlet for writing. Mm-hmm. And I did it for like a month. And I wrote probably like 8 or 9 different things, and it felt great. And I was like, these are awesome. I love writing columns. This is funny. I'm getting to talk about random shit that I enjoy. I was getting like subscribers. And then like a week passed where I didn't get to write anything because like shit happened. And then like another week passed where I didn't get to write anything. And then like another week passed where I didn't get to write anything. And then my shame was, fuck, now I'm letting all these people down who are trying to support this Substack. So I ended up just shutting it off.
No, see?
And I ran.
That's why, like, I told myself I wasn't going to start doing a newsletter or any, like, more writing unless I was going to actually dedicate myself to it. And I decided the best way to do that was to do once a week minimal writing. Like, I can write about the things that I'm putting out in the Sunday newsletter, but I'm not, like, fully writing columns or anything like that. And so I tried to make it a little more bite-sized for me because I wanted to keep producing written content, right. But I didn't necessarily have the time to sit down every week and do the writing that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, but the people that complain about like, oh, we have this day off. Like, I'm like, that's great. Like, I get it. But like, I can't just account for everybody. Like,
All the time.
I can't just do 10 hard posts a week for different countries that have like different holidays and stuff. It's so weird.
Represent all the different cultures of the world.
Yeah. It's just like, it's tough. Like I want everyone to feel included. I want everyone to enjoy it. I want everyone to celebrate slamming their laptop shut, but I can't cover all bases.
Can't please everybody, man.
One day I just took out till Monday and I was just like, there's a lot going on this week. Like some people have Monday off, some don't, some have Friday off, whatever. I just put Slam's laptop shut and just did it. And like a bunch of people reached out and were like, I respect what you did. Like you completely shut down the idea that like anyone can complain about any specificity here.
Good.
It's just annoying.
Good for you. How old are you two kids now?
6 months and 3 years.
Damn.
Yeah, my oldest turned 3 on Saturday.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Two kids under 3.
Yeah.
We're at 3.
It's fun. It's a lot, though. Like we talked about, like those fringe times when you used to be able to do stuff and...
You're gone.
Waking up early to, like, getting hit at 6 a.m. with inspiration to write something and then waking up and immediately doing it. Like, that doesn't exist anymore.
No.
But there's a lot of joy in other places, so you just got to find that.
No, I mean, and that is one thing. As much as I like to talk about the downsides of parenting and what having kids does to your personal social life and all that stuff, without a doubt, is the most rewarding thing I've ever done by far. That being said, you and I were texting yesterday about you put up in your stories this what looked like a nice like piece of pottery that mm-hmm. was broken. Mm-hmm. Don't freak out. And not being able to put anything in your entire house that's even remotely valuable below 5 feet from the ground because your kids will take it and destroy it mm-hmm. is tough, man. Especially for people like you're a decorator. You're good with aesthetics. You like to make your space nice. You're kind of a neat freak, right? I fall into some of the same categories like it's fuck it. I just have to give up. Like I just have to surrender.
We had these bouquets of flowers around because we had a birthday party and I was like, well, I don't know. These can't all just sit on our kitchen counter. So I'm just going to go put one on the thing in front of our TV. Not an hour later, I see him walk up to it and grab it. And I go, no, no, no. And he just looks at me like he's doing something wrong. And out of freaking out that he's doing something wrong, he's like, well, I need to set this down. And he just throws it forward. And I'm like, cool. And I should have just immediately ran up and cleaned it up. But I was like, no, I'm just going to take a photo of this. Like, the water damage that's going to happen is going to happen anyway. So, like, I'm just going to go take a photo. And
got to get the content out of it.
Like, it's like, yeah, that kind of stuff is like, that's the biggest difference. Whenever I hear, like, whenever I hear Brett or Randy, who famously do not have kids, like, oh, I didn't sleep well last night. Or like,
shut the fuck up.
Oh, I got so much to do after work today. I'm like, what do you possibly?
But they don't know.
No, I know. They don't know. But I'm like, shut up. Like,
I used to bitch about that type of stuff too. And now I feel stupid because I know the real world. And all right. So last thing, as one of the few people in the world, I would say is as familiar, if not more familiar with me, with the hellscape that is social media. Do you worry about how social media will affect your kids? Like, and I'll give you context. When I was a guest on your show, Circling Back, while you were at the Masters, Dylan, Dave, and I got into discussing, like, the outrageous shit that the algorithm serves us that like, it thinks that we want to see or need to see, like breastfeeding fetish content.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you've seen some of these, like, Florida tried to push a law or is still trying to push a law that, like, you can't have a social account till you're 16 years old or whatever, and, like, is getting sued by all these platforms and suing them back and yada, yada, yada. I know our kids are still young, so it's not something you have to worry too much about yet. But, like, as somebody who's as habitually online as I am, like, does this bother you yet? Because it's starting to bother me.
It kind of bothers me. After having our second child, I, like, don't post about my kids as much. And I think it's because, like, I don't necessarily think that that content is for other people than, like, other than people in my life who, like, know my kids and love my kids, have an investment in my kids.
Right.
I also don't think that people really want to see my kids all that much. Like, people started following me because of the writing and the content that I created before. While they might like the kids sometimes, like, I try not to post them all the time, but I also just don't really want them to be out there constantly.
Yeah.
Like, I posted him a few times, like, my oldest son a few times this weekend on my Instagram account because it was his birthday and, like, whatever. But, like, a lot of the times I'll just text people the photos that I take because I don't necessarily want them out there.
And yeah.
I haven't really gone down the road of thinking about that, like, in terms of, like, their interaction with social
media.
Like,
how you'll handle it when they get old enough?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would like them to not have phones for a long time. Like, I don't know. I sat in front of a TV for my entire life.
So, yeah.
Sitting in front of a TV doesn't bother me.
But it's different because the TV doesn't give you the ability to just go wherever.
Yeah. But, like, we would go wherever. Like,
yeah.
I was, like...
Yeah, but I don't think that was good.
You and up... No, yeah, but, like, yeah... Yeah.
Now it feels like more dangerous.
I grew up setting my friends' homepages to the most inappropriate sites that I can't even look at today.
Like Meat Spin?
Yeah, all of them. Like Meat Spin, Lemon Party, all of them.
Lemon Party.
We were constantly doing that kind of stuff. Like, we were finding people on AOL and some Messenger. We were typing in random inappropriate usernames and just hoping that we could send a message to somebody and they'd respond back. Yeah. Like, we would just mess with people. Like,
I famously was in the AOL lesbian chat rooms pretending to be a lesbian.
All of us did something like that at some point that was way more devious than, like, falling down some wormhole. Like, I'm more scared of the internet has a way of taking people's interests or beliefs and allowing them to take them way too far.
Sure.
Sometimes this is good. Sometimes this is bad. Like, the times that it's good is like, oh, my friend Johnny got obsessed with fly fishing and now he quit his corporate job and is a fly fishing guide because he watched a bunch of YouTube videos on how to tie fly, like, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But then the bad side of things is like, oh, Johnny's brother, Timmy, is now, like, obsessed with some, like,
wild conspiracy theory.
Yeah. And it's like,
that got him fired from his job. And now he's at home every day typing about the conspiracy theory.
Like, I want to have well-rounded individuals. And, like, I just don't want them to get so deep into something on the internet that, like, that's their entire existence. And I've seen it happen with me. Like, I think you and I both have somewhat similar personalities in that we get kind of obsessed with things sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And it becomes very easy to get obsessed with it, especially when you have all that information at your fingertips.
Right, like breastfeeding.
So, yeah, exactly. Like, if you've got the breastfeeding fetish, who knew that you could go on Instagram and see, like, bare breasts on Instagram.
Mind-boggling.
Like, I had no clue that was a thing until someone told me. And I was like, I didn't even believe him. I was like, no way.
What I didn't know that Dave told me is that a lot of the babies are fake.
which is even weird. Like, just I mean, no, it's not even. I don't even know if it's weirder. Like, I don't know. Do I want them to be real? Like, like, it's just there's so much to it. But I just don't want them to go down some path where like they are learning about something that's like unsavory that I don't know about because they're so deep in the internet. But then we also had Silk Road and like all that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah.
I think the good kids will rise up and be fine. Like they'll figure it out.
I like your outlook. This is helping me.
I don't know. Steve Jobs never let his kids have like devices, which tells me a lot about like, you know,
probably just the world in general.
Yeah. Like I think that's mentioned a lot when things come up like, oh, Steve Jobs never had, like he didn't want his kids having computers or whatever. And like that kind of does tell you something.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like you just got to not rely on the internet to be their only entertainment either.
We can close with this. I'm hopeful. I've felt it and I've seen it. This like drawback to analog.
Oh yeah.
That people have made.
Yeah.
There's
I
like
love
the
it.
Dummy phones now, the flip phones, like yeah. people are doing that. You have a fucking regular camera.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's gonna be more of a movement in that direction
over
the next decade as things continue to get worse with the fucking metaverse and AI, right? That's all gonna drive us into this even more absurd place that we're already seeing unfold. And I think there will be some saving grace there at some point.
The most enjoyment that I got in 2023 was buying a record player and starting collecting records. Like it was just such an easy, like it got me out of the house to go to record stores. I saw different parts of Austin I've never seen before, dipped into random stores if I was near one, got to meet people. Like flipping through records is pretty soothing. Like it's a mindless task. Going home and listening to a new record is a very intentional task. Like that alone showed me that I just need more hobbies like that. And
yeah.
I really wanted a hobby that could take me outdoors, and I settled for not. Which is fine.
You did like, well, though.
Yeah, no, like I'm just happy that I have a hobby that's not online.
I think this is the difference between you and me right now, fundamentally. I don't have any hobbies.
See,
I've got to go get some because, like,
But that's what COVID rattled me with. I was like, yeah. Once everything got shut down and I was just playing FIFA and working out on my Peloton, I was like, I'm still a slave to the screen even when I don't have to go to work.
Yeah.
So, like, I need a hobby.
Yeah.
What's that hobby going to be? And it turned out to be Grateful Dead, which like was both a gift and a curse. Like
we handled COVID very differently, Will. Very, very differently. I was like, I'll game for 1,000 hours a month and this will be the thing I do.
Ross, all I did, I recorded Circling Back every morning. I think I said this on Circling Back recently. I recorded Circling Back every single morning. I ate lunch. I would get on the Peloton, go for at least 30 minutes because that's what we had to do in order to have a drink that night. I would get off of the Peloton, shower. Before I would get in the shower, I would hit my weed pen and just like be like taking like a nice scrubby shower. And then I would play FIFA until Sally got home. And that's all I did. Like every single day for months on end
that
was just
tight,
that.
Though.
It was so awesome.
That sounds tight.
Like work was going great. Like yeah. I was like at the time I was like anxious as hell because I didn't know what was going on. But like that's also when I realized I needed the hobbies. And now the offline stuff is all I want to dive into.
Yeah. See, this is why I put up pictures of my kids because I don't have any record player or hobbies or other shit to post. So I'm just like, well, this is what I'm doing. It's my children.
So that's
who I'm hanging out with.
You need your hobby to be film cameras so that when you're taking the photos of your kids, that's your hobby.
And they don't go on the internet.
Yeah, there you go.
They just stay with me.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. All right, man. Well, thank you for taking the time with us today. I introduced you before you came in. So
that's
if
okay.
you were like, is this fucker going to plug any of
no,
my
I,
stuff?
I figured, I know how this rolls.
But yeah, tell everybody where to follow you.
Follow me anywhere. You can follow anything from Washed Media to Circling Back to Sunday Scaries or just my personal accounts at Will DeFreeze.
It's Will DeFreeze, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. Maybe one day I'll even reveal my secret Substack.
Oh.
Yeah. That's how much of a deviant I am, Ross.
Wait, you really have a secret Substack?
I have a secret Substack. No one wants to read it.
God, you're so deep
in the
game.
It's lame. No one wants to read it.
You're so deep. All right, Will. Thanks for being here.
It's been a pleasure.
That will do it for today's show, but I'll be back later this week with another ad-free premium episode of all new content available exclusively on patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast. Hit patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast now and sign up for a 7-day free trial where you can check out the hundreds of exclusive ad-free episodes we have published there over the last several years. Enjoy the 7-day free trial and then stick around to support our show and be a part of making sure the show can go on. Also, please support our sponsors by hitting the links in the description of this episode and using our dedicated codes and URLs. That's how we pay the bills here at Bolin Media. Again, you can find links to all of today's sponsors in the description below. To check out our other shows, go to bolinmedia.com. As I mentioned at the top, we've got Formula Bone giving you F1 coverage all season long with the host,
J-Bone, Jared Borislow, youtube.com/@formulabone, @formulabone on all the social mediums, and of course, it is available on the podcast platforms as well. Houston sports fans, check out Banging the Can, also on YouTube and podcast platforms. And if you're watching Shogun, we've got the season finale, perhaps the series finale, it is assumed, coming up this week. And we will be giving you a companion podcast, digesting and discussing everything that goes on oysters, clams, and cockles, available on YouTube and podcast platforms, hosted by myself and Mr. Barrett Dudley. And of course, when Game of Thrones, I'm sorry, House of the Dragon season 2 premieres June 16th, mid-June. Oysters, Clams, and Cockles should be your go-to companion podcast for all hot D coverage. Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at WR Bolin. Of course, follow RBP. Just search the Ross Bolin Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter. This episode of RBP is presented by Bolin Media. Video of today's show was produced by Cade Orris. Go to youtube.com/@TheRossBolinPodcast if you want to watch instead of just listen. And until next time, remember, you are not alone. Peace be with you and also with you.
Go low, baby.